Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit 1 million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy. I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, a man known as Antonio, but if I just check my notes, he's from Mill Hill, London, England. Bardi, hello, Bardi.
Buonasera, Windy. Buonasera, buonasera.
And our tactics guy and bounce pass boy, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, Windy.
We'll talk about bounce passes in a minute. Well done, Bardi. Well done.
Well, I would like to take some credit, but I didn't actually do anything. It was a superior technician, superior manager, and a superior game plan that actually done it for us.
I was going to wax lyrical about them, but I don't want to anymore after that. After that triumphant tirade. Look, they were brilliant. The better team on the day won, absolutely. Really liked watching Italy. I really thought their substitutions were spot on. Verratti was absolutely incredible. But I was so sad. I feel so sad. I felt so sad all day, all night. And then when I woke up this morning, the first thing I saw when I checked my phone was the racist messages that some of our heroes, and I will call them heroes because I think they are genuinely heroic in some of their social justice work and having a social conscience, the treatment of them by a small but unfortunately vocal majority just made me really, really sad after this sort of few weeks of hope we've had with this lovely team and their wonderful leader, Gareth Southgate. Nathan, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm doing great.
You're over it.
I never expected England to win the final. I thought we were massive underdogs, or should have been massive underdogs. So I took the victory in the semi-final was my victory, and I was happy. And yesterday was just the after party. So that was kind of my mentality. And then, of course, like, we score and we go up, and it gives me a bit of hope, and then crushes that hope, because that's what football's like. But for the most part, I thought we had, like, for me, it's very, very big picture with England, because, like, all my life, I grew up almost exclusively watching the golden generation get knocked out in the round of 16, right? Tournament after tournament, just really tactical misclass, really underperforming, huge, enormous media pressure and the effect that has and all of that. And now, and the end of that is Hodgson, who I think is over-criticised and under-celebrated, because I think things started to improve a little bit with him. Like, yeah, it's disappointing to lose the final because you believe for a minute that you can win it. But, like, I think that England have so dramatically improved over the last 5 years. I'm just so happy about that. Like, we're going through our Pochettino phase, right?
Yeah.
We're on that cusp, and things are so much better, and the mentality around so many things around England has improved so much. It's no longer about cliques and clubs. It's no longer, so much of the pressure has been thrown off, and it's so much more celebratory. It's so much more about a team effort and less about stars and individuals. And maybe in the end that went too far tactically. But I'm just really happy about the tournament, about the run, and about future tournaments, and about the crop of players that we have. So I'm really far from disappointed.
That's a very refreshing attitude, and I think in a few days' time I'll be feeling exactly the same. The problem for me is, you know, after I've been very open about how I've been feeling about Spurs over the last 18 months, what COVID did to my relationship with Spurs, and more importantly, what Jose Mourinho did to my relationship with Spurs. And I've always been massively club over country. Mm-hmm. Like, I did not understand how people could get so into England for many, many years. And this summer, they did make me fall in love with them. They really did. They won my heart, truly. Not just from being a bunch of great players who I really admire, but from being good people. And that's so important to me. And I fell hook, line, sinker, and I really wanted them to do it for them. I just so wanted them to have something tangible to show for it. But you're right, they have. There's so much progress there. This is the first time we made a final in, was it 55 years? I mean, for God's sake, it's such a huge achievement that it shouldn't be overlooked. But we need to stop talking about England and allow Bardi to celebrate Italy a bit. So Bardi, this one is from Bat Merton. And Moby Spurs. Ask Bardi what it feels like to win something important, and is it as fun as he thought it might be? Oh, poor Bardi. I mean, we should say that poor Bardi has caught COVID from going to the semi-final. We'll talk about that in a minute as well.
It is amazing to win something. And everything building up to this final, it was tinged with that I know you two and a lot of my other friends would be suffering that if Italy won. And it is tinged because I can't go full in. I don't feel like I can go full in because I don't want to upset you. I don't want to offend you. Last night on Twitter, I had to stop and think about what I was going to tweet because...
It's the first time for you.
You've grown.
I have grown. And I had to think about it. And because the thing is, like you kind of experienced, but the opposite way, is that the pressure builds over the weeks. And all of a sudden, Italy start playing well. We get to the final. And then as someone living in England, and an English person but an Italian fan, you have to kind of put up with all the, it's coming home. And every time I try and flag, look, I'm a little bit unsure about this England team. I don't think you're as good as you think you are. And after two minutes on Sunday, I was thinking, holy shit, maybe they're better than I thought they were. But thankfully, they reverted to type and they did the best thing you could do when you're playing this Italy team. They gave us the ball. Mm-hmm. And the moment England dropped off, it was just a question of time. And I'm disappointed we didn't win it in 90 minutes because I think we deserve that. And, you know, penalties remain a lottery. Jorginho is one of the best penalty takers in the world and he missed. So it does show that it is still a bit of a lottery and we could have lost that. And I think we probably deserve to win it on 90 minutes. And what it feels like, it's amazing. It's an easy thing to say, but it truly is. It's a release of tension. It's a moment of celebration where you celebrate with your family, your friends. My dad's on the phone to me. My sister's on the phone to me. And it's great. And it's such a lovely thing. And I hope that I get to share something like this with Tottenham with you guys. And that's really what I'm looking for. I've won the World Cup now. I've won the Euros. Let's win the Nations League this autumn and then let's win the Champions League with Tottenham and that would be brilliant and I can retire from watching football safe in the knowledge that there's no more joy that it can bring to me.
God, it would be so good, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be so good to win something proper?
Keep it us lot, nice people. None of these idiots sticking flares up their bum and the rest of it, storming gates. Us nice people winning the Champions League would be fantastic.
And Bardi, you're really suffering with COVID. Luke W95 says, is Bardi okay COVID-wise and could he not taste or smell the sweet victory because of it?
It took the edge off the whole day because I wasn't able to enjoy it. I wasn't able to relax and settle down. I hadn't planned to go to the final because I just thought it would be a mess, which it turned out to be. But then opportunities came up on the Friday evening to get tickets, and I I had COVID. I couldn't go. I'm a responsible person, even though I caught it in the first place. I'm a responsible person. I'm not going to go. Plus, physically, I wasn't up to it. So it did take away from it. We opened a bottle of champagne and I could only really drink a glass and a half. And I ended up going to bed. We watched a bit of Italian TV, but I couldn't really enjoy the aftermath of it because I was feeling so shit. And, you know, that's on me. It's on me catching COVID. And I think at this moment where cases are rising and everything's happening, people need to take a little bit of self-responsibility. And perhaps me going to a stadium with 60,000 people where there's no social distancing, there's no safeguards in place, was a bit kind of immature maybe or irresponsible. So
do you regret it?
Do I? It's very difficult to say that because I witnessed an incredible game against Spain. Mm. But today, right now, with the thought that I could pass it on to my wife, luckily we have a 9-week-old puppy, which she's waiting to get her second jab. So my dad's not been around, able to come around, and my sisters can't come around because they've got their own dogs and they would normally bring their dogs. So I've been able to isolate myself from them. But I do think it was probably a bit of a stupid decision to go there. And it was probably a bit of a stupid decision to watch the entire game without a mask on. Maybe I should have done that, but then perhaps I would have caught it anyway, who knows? But I definitely think the government needs to have a think about what they did this tournament by allowing these mass gatherings, because I'm really suffering today, and I'm a pretty healthy person, and God knows what it would do to if someone catches it from the football who aren't as healthy as me. So do I regret it a little bit? Yeah, I do.
You've had your first jab, but not your second, right?
Yeah, my second one was in a week's time.
And what have your symptoms been so far?
So on Thursday, I was in a meeting and my manager goes to me, you're coughing a little bit. And I hadn't noticed it. And then I did. I realized that every hour or so, or every half an hour, just a little cough came out of nowhere. And then Friday, I just felt hot and a bit sweaty. And then Saturday morning, I woke up and I felt like I'd been punched in the head. And my body was moving in slow motion. My joints were aching. The cough had got worse. My nose had blocked. And it was just, like they say, a really, really bad flu. And even though I took a home test and it came up negative, I thought I better go and get a proper test. So I went and did the proper test. It was really easy to do. They're close to everybody. I recommend that if you've got a cough and you've been in a large group or something, go and do it. I did that. 24 hours later, I got the results back that I was positive, and now I've been following all the guidance and filling in everything on the app, trying to tracing where I've been, which is Wembley. That's it. I haven't been anywhere else, so it can only be Wembley. And just trying to keep as much social distance with my wife as possible, because I don't want her to catch it, because obviously if she gets it and then I clear up, I've got to do another 10 days isolation.
Yeah. Didn't think of that.
So I'm in isolation until Sunday, which is pretty shit.
Get well soon, mate. Yeah, I hope you feel better so you can actually enjoy Italy's victory. We should talk about Nathan's video, the first Nuno video, about his time with Valencia.
Yeah, any any questions?
It's really good stuff. I learnt loads. I obviously had never seen Nuno's Valencia team before, or not knowingly anyway. Perhaps I did at the time, but forgotten. Interesting to see the tactical setup. Interesting to see that he probably wasn't as good as people might have led you to believe initially, and then pretty certainly good. Not as bad as people led you to believe by the end. Mm. Just pretty solid performance, right?
Yeah, if you want to do sort of the overarching thing, so obviously I want to do Porto and I want to do Wolves. I don't know if that's going to be two different videos or one video combined, and I want to sort of maybe look ahead. But to sort of like spoiler alert the whole thing, my kind of feeling with Nuno is that like probably had sort of the fourth best squads when he took Valencia to fourth. He probably had a top two squads when he took Porto to second. He probably had the best he definitely had the best championship side when he had Wolves in the championship. And then maybe Wolves to seventh is an overachievement, but not a massive one. So I think I'm beginning to place Nuno as the kind of manager who isn't making a team better than the sum of its parts, but can match that. And everyone's sort of having a good time along the way, and the football's decent to watch, and he's a likeable guy. So I think if you want to start looking ahead and cut out sort of at least another video's worth of content, then what I'm saying is that like a couple of years, a fourth and a fifth place, decent times, and then we look forward to maybe Pochettino comes back, or there's someone else on the horizon, or whatever else. And I'm you could say like, oh, that's a waste of the next 2 years of Harry Kane's life, but I don't think that that's a healthy way to be trying to run your football club. My feelings of Nuno are sort of okay, yeah, decent.
But Nathan, there's a thing there, isn't there? Like, if we do hang on to Harry Kane and Nuno is sort of making a team roughly even to what it should be, Harry Kane has an incredible season and suddenly that team's elevated. Suddenly that team can achieve more than... So Nuno puts in place tactic style personnel that allow us to be a solid fourth. Harry Kane has a Harry Kane season and we can finish third or second.
I'm not going to tell you no, but I just watched Harry Kane sort of sluggishly crawl through the mud twice a week for England on a summer where he should have been resting. So I think Kane needs another rest that he's not going to get. Or alternatively, for that reason, we accept 120 million bid from City and begin a long, painful process of rebuilding without him. So I am that tournament has been such like a strong example of like, here's Harry Kane. He can't move very well, but when he does get the ball, he can do wonders with it. He can do wonders with it inside the box and outside the box. He can do wonders with it in terms of shooting, wonders in terms of creating, in terms of holding and dribbling and all that kind of stuff. But his ability to get onto the ball by getting separation from defenders, I mean, it was good last season for a good while because he had that rest, but he just needs... He needs 3 months off a year and he's getting 3 days off a year.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. It's a really good point. And Nathan, what's a bounce pass?
So a bounce pass, this is the thing, and I mentioned to you this before recording, but like a bounce pass is also known as a wall pass, or you could call it a 1-2, but only in certain circumstances, or you could call it a layoff. But a bounce pass is... specifically within Nuno's team in Valencia is that a player will have settled on the ball and he's ready to make a play. And whether that play is a pass or a dribble or whatever else, he then plays a single pass to a player. That player immediately first touch plays it either back where it's come from or in a sort of a triangular motion to a third player. And that's the bounce, right? It's a quick two-pass combination, a bounce pass. And I wasn't sure when I was about to record the video, should I call them a bounce? Should I call it a 1-2? Should I call it a let whatever? And then in the video of Nuno's very first training session, the second drill they show us is, I think, Ian Cathro shouting, bounce, bounce, bounce pass, bounce pass. Let's have some bounce balls, lads. Bounce, as they're doing like a bounce pass drill. So I stumbled on the right choice there, I think.
For sure. Absolutely. And I think 1-2 doesn't quite cut it because it can be used in so many other ways as well. Whereas bounce pass is much more specific. I learned something there as well. Let's just go all over the place in this podcast. Bit of England, bit of Spurs, bit of Italy. Bardi, this one is from A Dirty Orange. What do we think Harry Kane's mindset will be going into Spurs' first season with Nuno and the European Conference League after a long but ultimately disappointed Euro 2020 campaign? Will the loss in the final further motivate him to push for a move to another club?
I think at the end of the game, I think Harry settled on the realisation that he's going to end his career as the greatest footballer never to win anything. And I think if you're not going to achieve something, achieve the very top of whatever that is. So if you're going to get relegated, be the worst team to ever get relegated. So I think Harry Kane, he realises now that his future's with us because we're intertwined. He is Tottenham. Just as we're Tottenham, he is Tottenham just like us. And you could take him out of the Tottenham team and remove all the Spursiness and everything else and put him in an England team with Sterling, with Saka, with Maguire, who was absolutely exceptional throughout the tournament. And he still doesn't win anything. So Harry, just accept it. Stay with Spurs. Become our record ever goal scorer. And die a Tottenham legend and with your statue.
I kind of made the comparison earlier with saying that Southgate is our Pochettino era, but to be an English Spurs fan is to basically support the same team all year round. It really is the same experience.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm surprised I'm so down, because you just thought after many years experience of feeling this way that I would just bounce back. And I you know, with Spurs, I have bounced back relatively quickly in recent years, but I found this one hard to swallow.
I thought Kane was excellent the first 30 minutes. I thought, obviously, his part in the goal. I thought the way he was taking the ball and controlling it and bringing others into play when England put players around him and close to him, I thought he was great. But as the gaps started opening up and England started dropping deeper, Kane, he can't do it all by himself, man. He's not Messi. He's not Ronaldo. He needs support and he needs help and he needs those legs working off him. But Sterling was starting from such a deep position that I did feel for Kane because he really, really tried.
Yeah, can't disagree with that. I thought we had a solid first half and then it was pretty patchy after that. Problems Dog says, given the impressive run to the final, should we reevaluate Southgate as a manager, or is the England job too different to translate achievements into club success? Not suggesting we get him at Spurs. I do think it's too different. Personally, I think they're completely. It's almost a different sport in the way the time you get with the players is totally different. It just is. It's a different job. It's a different type of job. Who was it? I think. I forget which writer it was. Someone was wrote an article in which they said that, oh God, I wouldn't be able to remember so I can credit them. They basically said that this is a very simplified version of the game. It's a very sort of puritanical version of football because there aren't these deep tactical systems. And that's why some people enjoy it more as a sporting event every couple of years. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. I really do. And I think Southgate is incredibly well suited to it. And I think I wouldn't trust him in club management because we've only seen him do quite poorly in club management, whereas now we've seen him consistently do quite well in tournament international football.
I think among the best teams over the last, 20 years of international football, you've had the sides who have sort of captured what international football is to its maximum, and that's the Portuguese winning side, that's the Champs France, and it's very reactive, it's defence first, it's 1-0 wins, it's sluggish football. And then you have the sides who have managed to synthesise club football in some small way, and I think that's Germany, yeah. I think that's been Spain at their best, and I think that has been Italy under Mancini. Mm-hmm. Probably Mancini's Italy is the closest I've seen to like club football on the international stage so far. And Southgate for me is very much more of the France, Portugal,
sure,
maximizing what international football is, putting a mirror back on international football and saying there's a strong chance, I think, that England have just ruined international football forever because now two defensive midfielders is going to be the norm and there's going to be no more goals. I think that Southgate's done a tremendous job. He can carry on doing that tremendous job. I think that club football would be poor for him and he'd be poor for club football. It's a bit like with Zidane. Zidane should have won the Champions League and retired from management. Southgate should persist with the World Cup.
Yeah.
If that doesn't work out, maybe one more after that. If that doesn't work out, retire. If you win it, retire. If it goes well, retire. If it goes badly, retire. And just say, this is my work and I am done. And not try to make the really difficult transition over into what is a pretty much a different sport in club football. But, you know, I massive respect him. He's doing and has done incredible work, but stay away from club football is my recommendation.
Yes, agreed. Go on, buddy.
I think Southgate has had a good tournament. I think when he came in 2018, he changed expectation levels and he found something that worked. And he got to the semi-final and then League of Nations final, and he's got to a final here. But my question is, I'm not sure whether he has enough goodwill to go to a World Cup and play like that again. I think his mistreatment of Grealish was bordering on, I don't know, psychotic. How he misused him. I thought his use of Saka as well was strange. I thought what's the point in taking Bellingham? I think we had this argument before, Windy, about young players and the Italy squad being a lot older than the England squad. I think, why take Bellingham and just not play him? You're better off taking a personality, perhaps, someone in the changing room, take an older, more experienced player. I just think he needs to stop trying to be France light, Portugal light. Go there and use these great technical players and hold the ball, pass the ball, and be a better football team. If he goes to Qatar and they get knocked out in the last 16, last quarterfinals, in the same playing the same style, then he will ruin his legacy. He needs to change. I think he might actually retire. I think he might quit international football. There was something in his eyes where I thought he just had enough last night.
I would be surprised if he left. I can see him doing the job for a long time. If he carry, I mean, he's got to a final this time round. If we do well at the World Cup, say semi-finals, I think he'll be seen as a success, and he could then get two or three more tournaments.
I don't think it is a success now, because now it's about building momentum and to get to another semi-final again. I mean, Russia was a golden opportunity, because that run to the semis was pretty nice. The run England had this time was pretty nice. And I think he should have got to the final in the World Cup. But the problem for me is he lost against Croatia, and he lost against Italy in virtually the same manner, and he hasn't learned how to cope when the tide swings against him. And I think that's something he needs to address pretty fast.
I think that's interesting. I think that's I stand by the decisions he's made so far. The sort of, ironically, like the risk to become risk averse. I think has paid off well so far. But I stand by that. But I think that I agree that now, and looking ahead to the next, now is the time to sort of, now that bedrock exists, and now that you can switch to that, and now that you can have some confidence in that, now play like Grealish and or Sancho on a regular basis and start to open things up. Now bring Henderson off earlier, now bring Bellingham into the fray and start doing that. And I think that we needed to have made those changes in the final earlier.
Yes.
But there you go.
I think there is a really good point around Bellingham there in particular. Had he come on in one of the earlier games and Southgate sort of had a bit more of a look at him and felt more confident, then I think he would have come on in the final rather than Jordan Henderson. And I think that would have improved us immeasurably as a team. Henderson was absolutely shocking when he came on. I like Henderson a lot, but he was absolutely shocking. Really, really rough performance. So I think there's definitely something in that. I think also Grealish, I was calling for him to be brought on earlier. I like Mount a lot. I didn't think Mount had a very effective game.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your dollar a month trial today at shopify.com/records.
But the biggest mistake in my eyes from Southgate is letting Saka take that last penalty. I mean, as a man who's been through that himself, who knows how heavy that responsibility weighs on you and can tear away at your whole life, your entire being, to put a 19-year-old kid in that position, 19-year-old black kid, let's say, because we've seen the abuse he's had from missing, I just think that was such a terrible mistake. And I understand, like, not putting Sterling there as well, because, well, for the same reasons, and Sterling would have just been torn down had he missed. But Grealish has said on social media today, I offered to take one. And we know that Grealish is, like, this ultra-confident, cocky guy who has broad shoulders. And I feel like it would have been a lot more sensible as a more sort of experienced, older player. I think it would have been more sensible for Grealish or Stones or Shaw to have taken that that last penalty rather than putting it on the shoulders of 19-year-old Saka.
Would you go Kane penalty 1 or penalty 5?
Yeah, I thought that was strange as well, Kane penalty 1. I understand you want to get off to a good start. I completely understand that. But normally it's 3 and 4, the pressure penalties, right? They're the ones you want. I would have had Kane at penalty 3 or 4, personally. But I see as well that you want to get a good start. And look, from Southgate's perspective, they've done a lot of work on penalties in training. And so he picked the players that perform best in training. And to some degree, that's like an evidence-based methodology. And I sort of see what he's doing. But there's more to it than that. There's 60,000 people in the stadium, but there's 27 million people watching at home. And that's a lot to deal with. And like, when you bring on two players specifically to take penalties and they both miss, it is a very bad look.
Yeah, this is really interesting for me. So I retweeted a Twitter thread earlier today looking into a study on penalties, and every result from that study is completely in line with the decisions that Southgate made, which shows that the strongest correlation with scoring is youth and match freshness. So the decision to bring on young players, to go with young players, to bring them on the last possible minute is completely in line with that study. And I find that really interesting. Now, whether you're happy with that study's completeness, whether you think that like freshness reaches a point where you probably want to have had the touch of the ball, whether the fact that they don't study race at all, especially with English players and the abuse that English players get on in racial terms, is sort of forgotten in the decisions made. I think that those are fair criticisms. But I think Southgate took some really interesting risks and made some really interesting decisions. And I think that if Rashford's penalty is 7 millimetres yeah. over to the right, then we're having a very different conversation about what a genius Southgate is to take those risks. So, I mean, essentially, I feel like you can't put the blame on Gareth Southgate for English fans and England being a racist society and fan base. Like, if Saka and Rashford are saying, "I want to take the penalty," you can't say no because you're black and you'll face all sorts of abuse if you miss. Because, like, I mean, for no other reason, someone's got to take the 7th, 8th and 9th penalty at a later stage anyway, right? So I don't think that you can sort of prepare for the racism. I think you have to make your decisions against it and around it. And I think, yeah, I mean, it's a tough one.
I really get what you're saying. And I appreciate the studies as well. And I've got no problem with Saka taking a penalty at all, but not the 5th one, not in that situation. Like, even like, had it got to the 4th one last night and he saw what was happening, there's still time to change it and to not let Saka step up and take that. And I really think that would have been the right thing to do, regardless of the studies. It just, I'm not a soothsayer. I don't claim to be a soothsayer. As soon as I saw Saka walking up, I had a lot to drink. I wasn't like thinking methodically, tactically. I wasn't thinking sensibly. I just started saying no, 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 no. And my girlfriend's looking at me and going, "Why? What's wrong? What's wrong?" And I'm just going, "No, no, no." And I couldn't say anything else other than the word no, because I could see what was going to happen. I knew, like, it just felt so obvious to me that the narrative was that Saka, this 19-year-old black kid, would miss the last penalty. And it was painful before he even took it. Even more painful when I saw the state of the fucking penalty. It was a really, really poor decision in my eyes. I mean, but again, I appreciate the studies. I appreciate the fact that he probably did look at evidence to back up his decision. I'd love to get Alex Doyle's thoughts on this as our resident sports psychologist, who's literally an expert in bottling big moments, and to get his views on that shootout, because I'm sure he'd have lots of interesting things to say.
I think England in particular have like are bad at penalties because we fear penalties, and we fear penalties because we're bad at penalties, and it's this one of Galaxy's thoughts, but it's this really horrible sort of negative spiral in which we all have to win 3 on the bounce for it to begin to turn, because like I watched it with family members, right, and they're all terrified of penalties, and the commentators are terrified of penalties, and the entire national mood around them is, "Oh no, we're going to go to penalties." And like, if that's the mentality, you've already lost, right?
And the manager of the team, the most famous thing that's ever happened to him, is he missed the penalty.
Pickford was going to be 7th. Pickford was going to be the 7th taker. Phillips was going to be 6th, by the way.
Okay.
That's level of interesting thinking.
Yeah. I mean, Pickford, wow, what a performance from him in the shootout. Jesus Christ. I mean, he had a fantastic game generally, but he really turned up for the shootout.
Right, but Donnarumma is maybe the best penalty saver in the world after, what, Handanovic? Just an absolute monster.
He makes the goal look small.
Yeah, it's his ability to just leap, to get a standing leap and cover his way to the post. He's an absolute freak.
Yeah,
he's never lost a penalty shootout.
I think
I think his penalty save ratio is maybe 60-something. It's ridiculous. I want to touch on what Nathan said, and I think it's really pretty true about England just are scared of penalties. One of the good things about Italy winning this is I can keep referencing Italy without you saying, "Ah, shut up, you lost the final." So in obviously Italy, like England, got knocked out of the World Cup in 90 on penalties. They lost the final in 94 on penalties, and they lost to France in 98 on penalties. And then in 2000, we came up against the Dutch. And I think the Dutch were the only team other than England who were worse at penalties than us. And they missed four penalties. I think they missed two during the game, and then they missed three in the shootout. And I think that got Italy over the stumbling block.
Mm.
Of course, they still lose penalties. We lost in 2008 to Spain on penalties. We lost the Confederations Cup semi to Spain again on penalties. So we still do lose them. But you're right, you need that big-time pressure penalty shootout. And I don't think that Colombia one was quite it for you.
Yeah.
I think you're going to need a slightly higher pressure game. And once you get over that, then it will just flow and you'll become more relaxed. I was at the Spain semi-final and my seat was right behind the goal where the penalties were being taken. And Donnarumma, he's a unit. And he makes the goal look like a five-a-side goal. It's incredible how small he makes it look. Because then the difference when Simon stood in the goal, and you could see the spaces. But I do want to give a quick shout out to Pickford because I have been kind of bad against him. I've said some bad things about him, but I thought he had a cracking tournament and I thought he made some great saves. And that penalty save from Jorginho is one of the best I've ever seen.
Really
good. That
was
an incredible save.
That's the right approach to Jorginho penalties as well, isn't it?
He outsiked him.
Patience.
Yeah. You have to be brave. Bardi, when it went to penalties, did you just feel ultra confident?
Not ultra confident, but quite relaxed. I was in that kind of mindset where we'd play better and I thought we were going to win. I was confident that we would win just because it makes no sense. I just thought the football gods would be, you're a better team. You play better. You'll win, which is totally ridiculous. So I was a little bit confident. But when Jorginho missed, I thought, holy shit. Because I think with Jorginho missing, had Saka put that away, I think it would have swung. Because if your greatest penalty taker misses, then that will send shockwaves through your team. And I'm not sure who would have stepped up next.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I always find penalties interesting in one sense. But I also just absolutely hate penalties. Like, not just because they're unbearable to watch, but because I just think it's an awful way to settle by that point, very long game of football. And it is, it's not a lottery, but it is a lottery. It's not a lottery because you can practice, you can rehearse, you can perfect, you can look at data, but it is a lottery because sometimes the wobbles just get to you before, and it's really hard. And also, I don't like the way that it just puts, it suddenly creates this intense individual pressure in a team sport. There's been lots of analysis of Marcus Rashford's run-up, which, I mean, in some ways is not dissimilar to Jorginho in terms of the stuttering. There's still forward momentum, but there's a stutter. What do you make of that, Nathan?
Again, like I said earlier, if he puts it 7 millimeters over towards the right, then he's scored. He uses his run to successfully turn the keeper the wrong way.
Mm.
His failure to find a target is so much less about technical ability. Like, if you think that Marcus Rashford can't hit the spot he wants to hit, like 19 times out of 20, when you take away the pressure of the occasion, like it's not a technical situation. It's completely a mental one. You're right that like penalty isn't really a fair way to decide a tournament, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, Windy, but I'm pretty sure what you're saying is that it should go to expected goals.
Oh yeah.
Didn't you lose
the real golden goal?
No, yeah, but not on this particular occasion.
Okay.
In future.
Oh, but can you imagine the arguing over which methodology you used to work it out?
Then Nick, he would just be blocking shots. That's what you'd do.
It's a bit like the Duckworth-Lewis method in cricket, isn't it? Of settling matches through expected results.
I mean, you'd really upset proper football. Proper football men would lose their mind if that's how it was done.
I love it. That's exactly why it should be completely embraced. So extra time has finished. 1-1. We will now go to the Michael Cayley method to determine who the victor is. Yes, love it. Why not? Mohamed Serti, who's so good with questions, says, does England have any central midfielders coming through, e.g. Busquets, Pedri, Verratti, that can help change the style of play to be slicker and more possession dominant? Type of midfield that can both control the game and allow the young attacking talent, Sancho et al., to thrive? Bardi, you kind of hinted at this earlier in terms of changing the midfielders. I have to say, I thought Rice and Phillips have both played well, to be fair, you know, essentially they're a man down there. They covered a lot of ground between them. And Phillips in particular, I thought was really good in extra time. But Rice, I thought, until he got substituted, was terrific. And I thought Phillips had a great tournament generally. But I also am up for switching one of them out or adding a third midfielder there. Bardi, anyone you think that would fit in well to the England team?
Well, I haven't seen much of Bellingham, but from everyone, the way everyone talks about him, perhaps him. And it just completely changes the game. If you can control the ball further up the pitch, you can create overloads. You can get players into positions where they can hurt the opposition. And if England could have done that and put Grealish in a situation where he could commit Italian defenders, perhaps the game would have been different. But I think Nathan probably knows more about Bellingham, but I guess him. Or Oliver Skip.
Bellingham's a sort of a box to box. He can carry the ball. He has a capable passing range. But he's sort of an attacking. Well, I guess he's sort of more of a Lampard Gerrard throwing back, which is obviously we've done that. I mean, this has always been England's longest issue and does continue to persist. Winks was sort of the closest England have had to a controlling, tempo setting midfielder, and he just hasn't realised that potential at all. McEachran, the younger McEachran, George at Chelsea, he really impressed me at the under-17s World Cup that Foden and Sancho were incredible at, and Hudson-Odoi too. So I don't know how his development is coming along. But yeah, this is something that we really lack. But we'll get there.
Could you convert Foden into a deeper line midfielder?
You can't now, but I think that when you have a 13 or 14 year old Foden, you have to stop putting them all as number 10s and wides.
That's exactly what I was just about to say. We are obsessed with pushing our talented players further forward and not just allowing them to be in the middle of midfield. It's very easy to sort of want to create just side to side players in midfield and actually be a bit braver, have some players in there that can pass the ball and have a first touch. I think that's definitely a really good valid point. We've got some quality players, got some quality midfielders coming through who I think can make a difference. So I think Bellingham absolutely is one. I think Eberechi Eze, could have been a midfield linchpin, but I suspect he might not choose England. We'll see. Tommy Doyle of Man City is meant to be very good. I haven't seen much of him. Lewis Bate of Chelsea is meant to be very good. I haven't seen much of him. Who knows? There's got to be someone sooner or later that breaks through and can challenge. But I'm happier now with our central midfield options than I have been for a while, put it that way. And I definitely think as a three, like, we can make a good three with the players we've got, including Bellingham. We've certainly not got a Verratti. We've certainly not got a Jorginho.
Or a Locatelli spare on the bench.
Jesus, yeah. I mean, the depth is mad, isn't it?
Yeah. I thought Cristante was very good. I was a bit concerned. I'm a bit of a Barella fanboy, but I thought Cristante... I shout out, I'm not a Mancini fan, to be honest. I think he loses his mind a little bit when things go against him. And I thought we could see moments of that in the first half. He lost his cool, and that translated onto the players. He's not a very calming influence. And eventually he got his shit together and he thought about how to tackle this problem. And he fixed it. He took off Barella. He took off Immobile, who's the worst player to ever have collected a winner's medal. He's so bad.
Should have been Belotti?
No. Belotti's even worse. I just play with 10 men. such a barren wasteland for strikers. It's awful. But going to a false nine really helped us overload the midfield even more and opened up that game. And I thought Cristante and Berardi were very good. And Mancini spotted that because Immobile going shoulder to shoulder or hip to hip against Maguire, that was a competition he was never going to win.
Mm. Right. We'll give you Calvert-Lewin if you give us Locatelli, and then we'll both be complete nations.
Do you know what? I think we'd do all right with Calvert-Lewin. I would take him. But I'm not sure I'd give up Locatelli. You can have Pessina, who's also very good.
Yeah, the depth is mad. Do you want to do some more, or do we stop there?
Let's do it.
Yeah. Eddington says, I feel Wolves scored a lot from set pieces. Haven't checked their stats. Is this a common thing in Nuno's sides? Nathan, you've done some bit of research on set pieces so far. I suspect there's more to come.
Yeah, so someone hasn't watched my video. But yes, yeah, so Valencia scored 20 set piece goals, making up 28% or something of the goals they scored that season. And then that's also consistently the case at Wolves. They've hit 10, 11 and 11 set piece goals, consistently getting between 20 and 30% of their total goals from set pieces. So yes, what I haven't looked into yet is whether it's because they are specifically good from set pieces, like they have plays from set pieces, they have ploys, they're good at getting people free, or they simply, because of their play style, just generate so many corners and generate so many free kicks and have big players that they are sort of resulting in goals. My suspicion is there are some clever ideas going on in set pieces, because that's just such a return. Like for Wolves, we had so little of the ball to return 11 set piece goals. Speaks to something. But yeah, I think so.
I would bet a bit of both.
Yeah, it's definitely both.
A team playing with lots of wing play will naturally win lots of corners.
Yeah.
But also they've had lots of good one-on-one players, and therefore you'd expect a lot of free kicks as well.
Mm-hmm.
We've got lots of good one-on-one players and should be winning lots of free kicks too, so being able to profit from them would be mighty handy. Peter Strom says, I read somewhere that we'd make up to 6 signings. What do you think about that, and what do we need? Yeah, this is... We want lots of turnover in our squad, don't we? We want to see players leave. We want to see new players come in. But you then have this problem of, is there too much change? Is there, you know, we've already got Sessegnon and Skip coming back into the side or into the squad from loan. Are we now saying, like, can we possibly settle in 8 new players? That's a hell of a turnover. You need some continuity. Where's the balance, Bardi?
There isn't really. I don't think you can. I don't think we've got the money to get 6 players anyway.
Unless we sell 12.
Well, unless we sell Kane. Harry Kane. Yeah, unless we sell Kane. I don't think we need 6. I think we just need 3 decent signings, and that will see us forward.
I mean, there's a difference between like selling Gareth Bale and buying 7 first 11 quality players, or attempted 7 first 11 quality players. There's a difference between bringing in 6 players who you want to improve the first 11 this season. And I think that if we bring in, you know, a starting centre-back, a starting right-back, and it looks like we're looking at midfield competition as fairly high up the priority list, which is an interesting one. That's a whole podcast or video series on its own. Mm. But I think that if you're looking at like bringing in 3 first 11 players, and then you're like, oh, well, we need to replace Winks as a squad player, we need to replace Lamella as a squad player, we need to replace Lucas as a squad player, then like it's not quite so as dramatic as it seems, because you're bringing in players who you're not expecting to see much of the game until December as it is, and it's not that big a worry.
Yeah, I think that's a very reasonable take, and then you've got the Conference League to sort of ease them in gradually and kind of getting used to. I mean, the thing is, the whole team's going to be learning a new style of play anyway, so it's probably not a bad time to have a bit of a squad refresh. We desperately need it. I mean, all the players you mentioned there, yes, absolutely. Sell them, shoot them into the sun. Add in Aurier and several others too. And, you know, Bale's gone, Vinicius is gone. There's heavy turnover. There will continue to be heavy turnover. It sounds like Paratici is incredibly active already in terms of his negotiations. This is a facet of his style, is that he has lots of irons in the fire constantly.
And I think that's why sort of Nuno is maybe accidentally a good fit for sort of a transitional period where we make that turnover in the squad. Do you want something a bit steady? You want something a bit easy? Mm. A friendly face, a coach in terms of individual player development, and just get those changes over the next 18 months.
Yeah, that makes complete sense to me. I must admit, I'm a bit confused about the midfield. But yeah, let's save that for next time. Bardi, let's end on this one. Top 5 pastas to throw at your English friends. That is from Chicago.
I think in terms of being able to launch it and cause damage, I think Farfalle, the butterfly one, kind of like you could like pew, ninja star them at the back of your hand at someone's head. That would be a pretty good one. Or Big Rigatoni, you could kind of chuck them. But I reckon if I had to pick one, I'd go for the butterfly pasta, the dried butterfly pasta.
Fusilli dried has sharp corners.
Well, yeah, Fuzili, he's a pretty good one as well. You could ping them around.
You're a spiteful little shit, Nathan, aren't you?
Yes.
Bardi, I could. I reckon I could throw a can of ravioli at you.
Can?
Yeah.
You could try. You wouldn't. Well, you might hit me at the moment because I can't move.
Not the pasta, the can.
The can. Cheers, mate. Shit, disgusting stuff as well.
It's rank.
Get knocked unconscious by the worst form of pasta ever.
It's been fun. It's cheered me up a bit. I genuinely have felt really down today. I am pleased for you, Bardi. I am pleased. I'm glad it was Italy. That's the thing. If it had to be anyone, at least allow it to be Italy, who I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed watching this tournament. What a tournament as well. Honestly, such a good tournament. Like, one of the best in my lifetime. Not just because England did well. Just some brilliant games and some storylines and the amazing thing that Denmark squad did, and God, it's been fantastic. I'm going to really miss it.
It has been good. It's been refreshing. It's been a change. You're right. The whole Eriksen story was it's so amazing that he survived and he's doing okay. And then, of course, for me, it's even sweeter that Italy won it. So, but in general, it has been the France Switzerland game sticks out. It's just an unbelievable match. And I think it was the same day where we had Croatia versus Spain, and then straight after France Switzerland, and that was just a great, great day of football.
The first Netherlands match as well stands out as a wild ride. Yep. Was it against Ukraine, I want to say? I think it was Netherlands-Ukraine. Yeah, that was a cracker. Yeah, just crikey, some great matches. Lots of fun.
Fabio Paratici is known for negotiating for up to 10 players at a time. Firstly, is that unusual? Secondly, should that be that unusual? And thirdly, that's a nightmare for me because I'm never going to know which players we're strongly linked with.
I think that is probably more normal than we realise.
Yeah, well, we're always like consistently linked with dozens of players every window that we don't sign.
Yeah,
because that's what you do. The difference is like between like scouting a player and actually actively entering the negotiation stage, right? But like, I don't know why that wouldn't be the case, why you wouldn't be sort of sniffing around with the ideas of bids. Because, like, essentially, if you're scouting and creating a profile of a player, you're like, they're this old. Mm. Here are their strengths on the pitch. Here are the positions they can play. Here are their weaknesses on the pitch. Mm. Here's what the personality is like, because we did a psychological report. All of that kind of information. But, like, and they're probably going to cost somewhere of the region of X to Y. It's like, well, why not scout that information by talking to their club?
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is the thing, isn't it? We've probably done all the first bit before because we've got a scouting department, but now we have a guy whose literal job is to negotiate with clubs, so we'll do that bit as well. It makes sense. It just fits. You know, you've identified your 10 midfield players for the position that you like. Just go and inquire about all of them. Why not? And that's why there's all these links now, because on the player's side, the information will come out. And you'll start hearing it. And also, from what it sounds, from everything I've read, Paratici is much more open about everything, generally. He's a communicative dude. We are going to hear a lot from him, I think. I think lots more of our operations will be done in public compared to how they've been done with Daniel Levy previously.
The world is our canteen.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, it's all or nothing all over again. And this time it's got an Italian twist.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, E. Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.